This is the Doug Marrone Show.
The Doug Marrone Show.
Former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman and JP Shadrick discuss the latest Jaguars news with the head coach. The Doug Marrone Show starts right now.
Here we go on the Doug Marrone Show. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, head coach Doug Marrone, week 10. What's up, coach?
How you doing, JP?
Great. Here we go. The Los Angeles Chargers coming to town this week.
How many times have you screwed that up?
I just say
San Diego Chargers.
I just say Chargers. I really do. I'm being honest. It is hard. It
takes a little time. So big game coming up. It's Military Appreciation Week here. And, you know, we were talking before the show to the PR staff here. You have a history with military appreciation with some of your football teams of the past, don't you?
Yeah. When I was at Syracuse University and I was the head coach, we did a lot. I was a big supporter of Clear Path for Veterans, so I was heavily involved with that. And then, you know, meeting the veterans and thinking of, you know, how do I get my players, you know, to have a greater appreciation, you know, for the veterans and what they've done. And, you know, Coach Schwarzwalder, who was obviously Coach Coughlin's coach, but was an outstanding coach at Syracuse University, was part of, you know, the D-Day invasion, and he was a paratrooper. And, you know, so I always wanted to make sure that I did the right thing for the players in college. And, you know, we took them to the Veterans Cemetery, you know, and where Coach Schwarzwalder was actually buried, and went to visit his grave. And then I tried to keep building upon that. And then what I wound up doing was I wound up taking the team up to Fort Drum, which is in Watertown, New York. And the general at the time was General Milley, who now is the Joint Chief of Staff, the highest ranking general. But I brought my players up there for a couple things. One, just the discipline and hearing the stories and seeing what they go through on a daily basis. And it was probably one of the greatest experiences of at least my life, and at least from all the players, from what they've said, because here we are in a room at night, you know, and you're trying to send a message about accountability and responsibility. And here are, you know, 22-year-old or 23-year-old, you know, veterans that have gone to war and coming back and telling stories. And it was very easy for our players to relate to that, you know, people that were their age. So it was a great, great experience for our players. Obviously, they were appreciative of us coming up there and giving them, you know, practice and things of that nature. But we did a lot of things. We went through the obstacle course. So what we did is we took our best players. We went through their type of training. Mm-hmm. They took their top people. They went through our type of training, you know. And then at the end, you know, we had scores and everything. And obviously, it was
competition.
It was competitive, and it was outstanding. And then at the end, they you know, we weren't going to play them in paintball because we would lose that. But, you know, we wound up playing with the players and things of that nature. But it was a great experience, and we stayed up there for quite some time. I mean, we would be there for a week, so we would have the drill sergeants come in and wake the players up in the morning.
Oh.
You know, and then they would have to stand in line, and
they would march. Did they get talked to like the drill sergeants talk?
Yeah, and, you know, we had to lay out the rules and everything, and then they would go ahead and they would march to the mess hall. But it was an outstanding experience, and it's one that I know I've always appreciated. Obviously, my whole family, except for myself, you know, has been involved in the military throughout the years. And, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that the reason why, you know, we're able to do what we do and the freedoms that we have are, you know, for the people in the military and what they do for us on a daily basis.
So did when they're in this competitive situation, you got players doing their stuff and their guys doing football stuff. Did the coaches get involved in any of that activity?
Ooh, yeah, good question.
No
obstacle course for you?
No.
Because, you know, the drill sergeants usually kind of, you know, run right along all the you know, their guys. I was just wondering if coaches kind of said,
well, hey, we had a lot of discipline on the team, but I was happy that the players said, I say, hey, listen, you know what, if you don't make the right decisions in life, this is where you're going next. You're going, you know, you're headed off to the military. But they, like I said, the people were there. And actually, the offensive tackle for Pittsburgh was actually up there at that time.
Villanueva.
Yeah, Villanueva. He was up there. And I thought to myself, because after Syracuse, I left for Buffalo. I'm like, gosh, I knew him, and he didn't even give me a call. We would have taken him in Buffalo, you know, and he wound up going to Pittsburgh.
That's a cool story.
Yeah. Small town.
Yeah, that's a good story.
So, well, and the stadium is going to have, obviously, the NFL league-wide. You know, the Salute to Service game is this weekend, and Jacksonville is a big military town. And, you know, your first year on the job, do you plan on kind of having some type of activity in the off season with your team eventually, get involved with the military like you did at Syracuse?
I mean, it's very difficult because of, you know, at Syracuse you have the players for a longer period of time as far as what you want to do and training camp and things of that nature as far as, you know, what you want to take them, what you want to get accomplished. You know, we do a lot of outreach programs where we invite them in and try to go. But myself personally, you know, I went to the Rangers unit over on the other coast of Florida this year. My wife's cousin is obviously a special forces. He's a Ranger, and it was a great experience for me because I went down there and they showed me everything. They showed me all the obviously the people that, you know, have been killed and the memorials that they have and what they do and the equipment that they have and, you know, and we spoke about leadership, which I always try to. It's almost embarrassing for me to go and speak about leadership to the military, because I think, you know, from my experience, from all the things that I've read and all the military people I've been around and the conversations I've had with them, they truly are the greatest leaders. They truly are. I mean, as far as their communication and what they get done, the training methods that they have. And I never compare the sport that we play towards what they go through. I just think that's wrong. So I don't even go there. I mean, you know, we play a sport that's obviously very physical, but it's not what they do. I mean, they put their life on the line for, you know, all the things that we believe in as a country, and I think it's just, you know, I'm very appreciative of what they do.
There's a lot of coaches in the National Football League in your position being a head coach that do a lot of reading. Because you are able to gain great insight from reading about past great military leaders. Do you read? And if so, do you read things of that nature?
I do. I'm big into a lot of history, from World War I to World War II to, you know, the Vietnam War, which obviously affected me because obviously my uncle served in the Vietnam War and he wound up passing away, and that's always very, very close to me. When I was growing up, my parents always told me when I asked them when I was younger, what did I watch? And, you know, I would watch the news and watch the clips of the Vietnam War, you know, obviously because my uncle was there. I have letters that I had written from when I was 5 and 6 years old. You know, we're talking about, you know, 1970, you know, 1971 that I had written my uncle. And scratch that he had saved and put in when my uncle passed. My grandmother obviously had given me everything, so it was very close to my heart. And it was difficult for me when I was growing up because when my uncle came back, he had some issues, from in the military and his place where his safe place was the VA hospital, and you know, everyone that he was with had passed and he would go there and he would never really talk about it quite a bit. But I grew up not understanding my uncle. And at sometimes I was disappointed, you know, in some of the decisions. And then when I started working with Clear Path for Veterans, and that's right outside of Syracuse University, I started to realize that when the veterans come back, you know, the support that they need afterwards. And it really opened up my mind and I get very emotional. And it made me feel better. It made me understand that, you know, my uncle coming from war had some serious issues that, you know, we as a country didn't realize at the time or had the support for, and I have a better understanding and a greater appreciation because when you're 8 or 9 years old and your uncle's not in very good shape or 10 and 12 and you're watching him struggle and it was difficult for me to handle as a teenager. So I always appreciate, you know, the things that we have set up for support for our veterans that come back because I know how difficult that transition can be.
Unique perspective, Coach. Well done. Let's come back and get into football. Phillip Rivers is coming to town. We'll break down his history against the Jaguars and see if that'll change this week. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
JP Shatter, Jeff Lagerman, head coach Doug Marone. The Doug Marone Show continues. Jags Chargers coming up. Chargers means Phillip Rivers is coming up. He's had seven outings against the Jags all time. He's 6-1, 6 in a row, averaging 300 yards per meeting against this organization. I think 19 touchdowns, 4 picks in his career. The guy's going to Canton one day whenever he decides to hang it up. But he's so good. But not even after the play. When the play starts, yeah, certainly the stats show it. But before the play, he knows what you're doing before you know what you're doing a lot of times.
Well, he's had great success. He's an outstanding quarterback. It's going to be a great challenge for us. Obviously, in the last six times that he's played, you know, he's had – really numbers that are off the chart. I mean, you know, you're talking about 75% completion rating, you know, over 300 yards, you know, a game, you know, 3 touchdowns a game, you know, and then even against this certain style of defense, I mean, he's, you know, he beat Seattle a couple of years ago, obviously the same style of defense, and then obviously last year during Atlanta Super Bowl run he won a big game there. So, you know, he's very comfortable in playing this defense, and that's the one thing that, you know, when you have a quarterback that's like Phillip Rivers, who's an outstanding quarterback, and he's comfortable, they're going to put numbers up like that. So it's going to be a great challenge for our pass rush, you know, to see how, you know, we can get to him. And then, two, obviously, in the back end, you know, with our defensive backs and our linebackers.
One of the things that has impressed me the most about watching him through the years, a great competitor. I mean, great competitor. Fiery competitor, doesn't matter what the situation of the game is. He is fighting every minute, every play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a coach's kid, you know, and I think that, you know, we hope as coaches all our kids have that competitive nature in them, and, you know, he shows that. And I think, you know, when you reach the status and you talk about elite quarterbacks, which I put Phillip Rivers in, you know, they have that type of competitiveness in them. I think that's what makes them elite, that, you know, they're out there, they do everything they have to do during the week, they study the game, they know exactly where they want to go with the ball, they take it, you know, very personal. I mean, it's a battle. I remember talking to, you know, Drew Brees once, and, you know, even the Tom Brady's of the world and the Peyton Manning's, and, you know, they feel it's like, hey, it's myself versus this defensive coordinator. You know, he's going to try to do things to me, and it's very personal, and I'm going to win this battle, you know, going out there. So I think, you know, when you have that type of competitiveness in you, you have the ability to play extremely well.
One thing that I think has helped Phillip Rivers, Ken Wisenhunt, who Phillip Rivers kind of had, I guess, a rebirth a couple years ago when he got Ken Wisenhunt to be the offensive coordinator. Now they're back reunited again in L.A., and it seems that those two do very well together. And the thing that kind of jumps out under the years with Ken Wisenhunt is that the turnovers, the interceptions, have been lower with Ken.
Yeah, and, you know, I've known Wiz for a long time. I mean, back in the mid-90s. I mean, obviously, I was at Georgia Tech. He's a Georgia Tech graduate. So, you know, we had a little bit of a connection, and then we started to become, you know, I would say friends probably early on in our careers when we first started off. And then he was up in Pittsburgh, and I was in New York. So I have a great amount of respect for him. You know, schematically, he gives you a lot of issues, you know. You know, they're going to move. They're going to have, you know, a lot of crossing patterns, a lot of things of that nature. It's going to be it's going to be taxing on you as a defense, you know, to make sure that you have everything covered. And then you have a quarterback like Phillip Rivers that if you're just short on one of those routes, you know, he's going to be able to deliver the ball.
Have you seen a defense that you've had as a head coach with as much swagger as this one right now? They seem very confident in what they're doing game to game.
Yeah, when we were in Buffalo, we were number one, you know what I'm saying, in points per drive. And they had a pretty good swagger about them. I think for us, you know, because, you know, we haven't had a lot of success, meaning in the past, that it's going to be something that, like I tell the players all the time, I said, listen, you're not, you know, if you play 3 games, you play 4, you know, we've played 8, okay? It really doesn't matter right now because we haven't accomplished anything. We know where we want to be. We know where we want to go. But we're not going to get that respect until we can do it for a season, you know, and then hopefully into the playoffs is what we're trying to get done. So, you know, that's what I try to keep our players focused on, because, you know, if you do it for half a season, it's a fluke. You know, hey, you know, because all of a sudden if you go the other way, it's like, nah, you know what, it's Jacksonville. This is what they are. You know, so for our team, you know, the one thing I keep telling them that, you know, to be able in this league, the one thing in this league, you have to do it every single Sunday and be consistent throughout the season to identify to for people to say that's who they are.
We'll come back, get into the Jags offense, some faces back on the field this week for the Jags O, and a familiar face running the Chargers defense as well. This is the Doug Marrone Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marrone Show continues right now.
Final few moments with the head coach, Doug Marrone. The Doug Marrone Show continues. Jaguars offense. Leonard Fournette back in good graces, sounds like. He's going to go for, you know, it'll be the first time that he'll be on a field playing football in a game in like 27 days this Sunday, which is quite a break in the middle of a season. Think about that, Logs. I mean, it's in the midst of a season as a rookie running back in this league for as many carries and touches as he's getting. That's a big break for him to set up the stretch run here.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously he's coming off an injury too. Yeah. I mean, you know, in that break, so that was, you know, to be able to get him back is obviously big for us, and we're excited. And you know, he's had a good week of practice. He looks good out there, and then, you know, obviously we'll get him on the field and get him going.
How's your offensive line doing? Last week you had to kind of do a little bit of shuffling with AJ Ken popping up on the injury report on Friday, with Leonard moving to guard and Shatley staying at center. Do you envision that kind of being the same going forward, or is everybody healthy enough to where, hey, look, we're going to be able to make decisions based on, you know, non-injury situations?
Well, right now I'd like to be able to say that we'll be back to where we were before, you know, as at this moment. So, you know, we got to come tomorrow and see where everybody is. But, you know, we've had three of those guys limited, you know, during the week. So, you know, they've been working and everything's progressing. At least it looks like in the right direction, but, you know, we'll know more tomorrow and Saturday, but I'm hoping that, you know, that group is together.
What a great challenge this week. And Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa, I don't know if I've seen a more ferocious pass rusher than what Joey Bosa is. I mean, he's got the ability to play left side, right side. He can bring power. He's got speed. His level, where he's at with his hands, I think impressed me when he was at the collegiate level. And holy cow, he's the most dynamic pass rusher in the first 20 games in NFL history.
Well, I mean, you can see that. It's everything you said. I mean, technically, you know, his hands are outstanding. And I think his motor runs, you know, full tilt along with Ingram. Both guys don't give you a lot to hit. You know, they have small surface areas. They're able to, you know, torque their bodies in a way to clear you from a hand standpoint to do anything like that. So, you know, like for our guys, we're going to have to, you know, I've always had this philosophy. In order to slow good pass rushers down, you know, when you're running the football, you've got to win those downs. You've got to try to wear them out and hope that you just wear them out a little bit just to take them a little bit off their game. But I think it'll be difficult. You're looking at two players and watching that last game that played, you know, almost 70 plays each. And when you look at the production and what they did for 70 plays, it's truly outstanding. So, you know, our players are going to be into a battle. It's going to be every single play. You've got to give everything you have, you know, just to get to a point where you may, you know, be able to beat them. So it's going to be a big challenge for us up front. We've had challenges, you know, before this year. You know, our first game, obviously, when we played Houston, had a very good front. You know, last week against Cincinnati, we were able to, you know, stand up to that challenge. And this is just another week in the NFL. We need our guys to step up and have a big day.
Gus Bradley on the other side, leading that defense. It's a big business, but a small league. Guys move around the NFL and face former teams. That happens all the time in the NFL. What's it going to be like when Gus comes in?
Oh, I mean, I can't speak for all the players. I know that, you know, we're all appreciative that a lot of us are here, you know, obviously because of Gus. But I think, you know, it still goes back to the players that are on the field that are performing. I think that's, you know, the most important thing. I've been through it before. I've been up to Buffalo. I've been to New Orleans. I've been to New York. You know, a lot of us go through that where we've coached. And I don't think it ever comes into play. I know it didn't for me in my mind, you know, going back, you know, to Buffalo or going to New Orleans or New York, places that I've coached, because, you know, my focus was on making sure that the players were ready to go, that, you know, my role and what I was doing in the game or the game plan was ready, and I was totally focused into that, and that's where all my focus was. And, you know, I don't want anything to take me off that, because it wouldn't be fair for the players. So, you know, and I think that's how it is in this league, because, like you said, there's so much – it's such a volatile business, coaching, and it's a volatile league where, you know, obviously if you don't win – you know, people are going to be moving and going. And we all understand that, and it's something that we've signed up for. So you're going to have a lot of this going on throughout the league. And it's just something that, you know, we all, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have to deal with it. I think it's a lot tougher on families than it is on the actual coaches. So I think when we go out there, you know, it's just basically about the players and them having the ability to play.
Anthony Lynn, their head coach, was here in 03 and 04 as running backs coach. He played about the same time as I did, so I knew Anthony. Great guy. Well, did you ever cross paths with him? I know he spent time in Buffalo where you were. He spent time in New York where you were at. Any experiences with Anthony?
No, I've never really crossed paths with him. I know that, you know, he, you know, with Coach Parcells, you know, and obviously I know Coach well. Coach obviously speaks very highly of Coach Lynn, and then some of the coaches that I was with at Buffalo that stayed there, you know, talk highly of him too. So, you know, I've heard, you know, all great things about him. I was happy, you know, for him to get an opportunity. I think he's doing an outstanding job. I think this team's coming in. You know, they started off, you know, they had some tough losses. They were very close games, but, you know, they're on a roll, a little bit of a roll right now, and they're trying to get themselves started for the second half of the season. And that's the same boat we're in. We're trying to get ourselves started in this third quarter the right way with a win. So it's going to be a great challenge.
Doug, well done. Good luck to you this week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Jeff.
Head coach Doug Marrone with us. This is the Doug Marrone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
I don't know if I had any hesitation. I always wait for the trainers and for Coach Marrone to let us know what's going to happen. You know, when you look at Cam Robinson, his demeanor is just the type of demeanor you want in the offensive line room. And the other guys are the same way. You know, if it's possible, they're going to play. Yeah, you have to fight. You're going to have bumps and bruises, and everybody does in the NFL. And that's part of a young guy learning. You know, it's a long season for him. And, you know, you feel good the first game, and then after that you have to get yourself mentally, hey, I'm going to have a nick here, a nick there, and you have to go out and play because the other team's doing the same thing.
That's Pat Flaherty, offensive line coach for the Jags earlier today.
Fine coach.
Yeah, hear more on the J.P. Shattuck podcast. Full interview coming up Sunday on the Public Tailgate Show.
Self-promoter.
Cha-ching. Indeed. I know what's coming from
you know,
Joe Fortunato.
I think I got to tune into that because I think Pat, if number one, is an outstanding coach. He's got a lot of wisdom. He's won Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And I didn't know for years who he was. But then, obviously, following Tom Coughlin's career when he was with the Giants, I just remember going, you know, watching that Giants offense and watching them win and looking at the personnel from just an individual standpoint, I didn't think they were that good on the offensive line for the Giants. And so my first question was, after watching them and kind of, you know, assessing them as individuals, obviously they had Tom Coughlin's son-in-law, who was an outstanding player.
Chris Snee.
But the rest of them, especially at left tackle, I don't think they ever really had a true left tackle. And I was like, who's their offensive line coach? And when I heard it was Pat, I was like, you know what? Kudos to him. He's a great coach, because if you can take, you know, the individual talents that, and if you add it up, it doesn't equal to much, but then if you put them as a whole and you add them up, it equals a much greater number. That's the type of coach that Pat is.
And it seems like that's kind of the case here. The last couple of weeks especially, guys have gone down, guys have jumped into those spots in an instant where they need him. Well, Wells at left tackle 2 weeks ago held his own, at least got him
against
through the
Indy,
week.
Look, you know, let's be real, and that, you know, if there was a team that you would like to have a backup coming in, it would be against the Colts, because they have really struggled to find any kind of edge players to replace Freeney and Mathis. You know, so it's a good situation, but you know, the job that they have done. I mean, this past game against the Cincinnati Bengals, they did not allow a sack. They have Geno Atkins, who is a big-time player as a defensive tackle. Carlos Dunlap, who is an excellent player. And then they had Lawson, this young rookie who was leading the rookies in sacks,
yeah.
who Cam had to block, and Cam gave up one pressure, and that was it. But, you know, look, for Cam Robinson to play as well as he did on what you could tell that it wasn't healthy, his ankle. But he gutted it out. You know, and there was one point it kind of got a, gave him a tweak. He came out. He got spatted on the sideline, and then he was back in the next series. A credit to him for fighting through it because, look, that's what offensive linemen do. You know, just like a coach, if you, you – Doug Brundis was talking about, you know, as a coach, you sign up for the volatility in the job. Mm-hmm. As an offensive lineman, you sign up that you play when you're hurt, and that, as the league as a whole, but more so I think for the offensive lineman – and the job that Brandon Linder did from getting, you know, maybe one practice at right guard, which he hadn't taken snaps at guard since going all the way back to pre-training camp
I think he did in camp this year.
OTAs, okay, which they were kind of shuffling everybody around. You know, I mean, what a great job that he did. I mean, it, playing, you know, center and guard and tackle, they're all very different, even from one side to the other because your sets are very different. So for Linder to be able to have a clean set that he had in pass protection, clean tracks on his run blocking, and then to work flawlessly with Shatley and Parnell on each side, what an outstanding job. And Shatley played very well. Linder played exceptional at guard. And Cam Robinson gutted it out. What a great job by the offensive line.
Doug Marrone half-jokingly this week said that he was talking to Linder about, hey, be ready to play some tackle at some point. They were doing some sets in the hallway here. You know what? I might not put it past Brandon Linder. He's a good football player overall.
He did at Miami now. Yeah. I mean, he played right tackle at Miami a little bit, and I wouldn't hesitate in a pinch,
in a pinch
that if you had to during a game, if all of a sudden you had some major injuries at tackle, that you got Jeremy Parnell goes down, Josh Wells go down, who would the next guy be in at right tackle? It would probably be Linder. He would probably be the third tackle on the left side. You know, so he's got that kind of ability, and I'm glad to see him back in the lineup. You know, Brandon Linder is unique in that, you know, if you looked at him and Shatley in the weight room, Shatley is, you know, he's like He-Man. I mean, he's supposedly the strongest guy on the football team in the weight
room. You've said that for years, yes.
But if you watched Linder and Shatley play, you would say Linder's the stronger player. You know, because weight room strength and football strength are two different things because you're involving, you know, muscles, upper body, but also athleticism, balance, explosion. And Linder's is a great package. And, you know, he's, I think, arguably the best offensive lineman. But now you actually have to start talking about Cam Robinson in that conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, and the job that Jeremy Parnell did against Carlos Dunlap, who's a very challenging player to block for two reasons. One, he's long, he's strong, and he's athletic. Number two is that he doesn't have a great motor. And people say, why would you say that that's a challenge because he doesn't have a great motor? A lot of times players like that can put you to sleep, and then when they finally turn it on, you're kind of not ready for it. And Parnell had showed great punch, great extension, handled Carlos Dunlap in great fashion. So, overall, I don't want to say it was their best job as an offense because I don't think it was, but I think as the offensive line with the challenges they faced, that was their best game to date.
I want to come back and not get into a fight with you, but talk about fights.
Okay.
How about that? Because I would win a fight with
you. I've had a couple of them.
I think I'd like to hear some stories. Story time with Jeff Loggeman when we return. It's the Doug Marrone Show on Jaguars Radio.
I told him on every play that he was weak, that he was soft. That demonstrate facts. He just couldn't handle the truth. It's facts. Told him that his time almost up. Told him that it was easy, which it was. He had one catch for 6 yards. I was just out there spitting facts to him. So he got mad.
That's Jalen Ramsey earlier this week when asked about the A.J. Green situation. The Doug Marrone Show continues. J.P. Shatter, Jeff Loggeman, we had the head coach in the first half hour tonight. You know, and Ramsey sat there with the media, and he hasn't. He's I don't know if he's totally into the media strum every week. You know, some weeks he kind of skips around.
JP, just say it. He's not media friendly.
He can be. And there are times he sat there for 20 minutes. He wanted to get it off his chest
and I get it.
It was awesome, by the way, too.
Well, look.
The whole exchange.
I think that the reality is, first of all, A.J. Green is not weak. A.J. Green is a phenomenal player. I think it's pretty incredible that Jalen was able to get into his head.
I don't think that's ever happened in the league.
To take him out of his game. You know, I mean, look, there's not many guys that can compete with A.J. Green physically. You know, and if you watch the game, Jalen Ramsey was manhandling him, with the exception of one play. And that's on the touchdown run the running back for the Bengals, the rookie.
Joe Mixon
ended up scoring to where, you know, it appeared that, you know, Jalen was wanting a holding call, but, you know, he didn't do enough to warrant a holding call to try to get off of the block. But, you know, A.J. Green had him locked up pretty good. You know, but that's a great matchup. You know, I wish it was more appreciation from both sides for the battle so we could have seen it for an entire game, and it didn't come to that at the end of the first half. I know that the league came out today. I think they fined A.J. Green somewhere in the range of $40,000.
$42,000.
And
he's not appealing.
And I don't think Jalen Ramsey got a fine, which he shouldn't have gotten a fine. He shouldn't have gotten kicked out of the ball game. But that was a great matchup. And, look, fights happen.
Yeah, let's delve into this, because your history in the league is, you know, it's a physical position, and you're a defensive lineman. You hit quarterbacks for a living. That some guys get chippy when things like that happen, right?
Yeah, I mean it. And offensive linemen. Look, I learned early in my career. I remember it was Bruce Matthews.
I think I've heard this one.
Who played with the Houston Oilers and was, look, he's a Hall of Famer, and he blocked me one time, and he blocked me well. My feet get tangled up, and he takes me down to the ground, and he's on top of me.
Well, he pancaked you.
Pancake. Like I said, I got tripped up. Which
it was a pancake.
It was a pancake. He got a grade for a pancake.
It was a pancake.
No question. He got a pancake.
Okay.
So, like a dummy, okay, I'm on my back with a 300 and – what's Bruce Matthews? He's probably 320 pounds. Huge man. Strong. Strong as all get out. I mean, like country strong. And so I made the dumb, you know what, decision to throw a rabbit punch into his throat from on my back. Okay? Because he took me over the pile and, you know, and he gave me what he should have.
Sure.
If I was an offensive lineman, I would have done the same thing.
You would have pancaked you too, right? Yeah.
Well, bad decision to throw the rabbit punch to the throat, because he proceeded to grab my face mask with two hands.
Okay.
And started to just pound my head into the turf repeatedly. And when he got done, I couldn't see straight. And I said to myself, lesson learned. Don't ever throw a punch with a 320-pound man on top of you with no chance of getting out of the way for his response. But, you know, look, fights also, you know, preseason, Ron Heller, Joe's Philadelphia Eagles, okay? Ron Heller hated if you even smelled the cologne of Jim McMahon in the preseason. And if you so much as touched him, he would get irritated. Well, we had, I think, three consecutive years we had three fights. And one year they just broke us up. The next year they just broke us up. And fortunately we didn't have that many plays together, because I think it was in preseason game number one. Mm-hmm. Well, one year it got out of hand and the benches cleared and there were a lot of punches thrown. I don't think any of them really landed, but there were quite a few of them thrown, and we both got ejected. And the crazy thing is that, you know, it was like every year we'd fight. And it was always in the preseason, and you didn't care about worried about being ejected. And then one year, here in Jacksonville, they hired him. They hired him. He shows up in the locker room, in the equipment room. He was coming to see the equipment guy, Bobby. And I'm sitting there seeing Ron Heller. I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to fight. We're going to fight. So I came up behind him and gave him a two-hand shove. I said, let's go. Come on, Ron. He turned around. He saw it was me, and we started laughing. And, you know, we gave each other a hug and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, it stays on the field. It doesn't leave, you know.
It should, yes.
Yeah, of course, you know, at that time we were well removed from our playing days, you know, but it was a cool memory. We laughed about it. Same thing, you know, that for years going against the Baltimore Ravens, they had Jonathan Ogden and they had Zeus, the right tackle, which might have been might be the biggest human being on the planet, and he's passed away. God rest his soul. And Zeus was about 350 pounds of just mad guy, you know. So he outweighed me by, you know, close to 100 pounds.
Wow.
And we had some great matchups, you know. And, you know, the great thing about him outweighing me by 100 pounds is that he didn't have very good hands, and they were always outside. And so you could jack him up, put your hands inside, you'd stand him up, throw him aside. You know, but it was awesome, you know, seeing him. We never had any fights, but there were times that it almost got to that point because he was mad that a 260-pound guy could stand him up and throw him aside, mm-hmm. and that if you were anywhere near the pile later in the game,
he's going to get you.
He was coming for you.
Yeah.
And he was coming for you with a lot of anger, and that anger was not controlled by Zeus, I can tell you that.
Head on a swivel, boys.
You better have your head on a swivel with Zeus.
Oh, let's come back.
He didn't like me very much.
Apparently not.
But after he retired, and it was great because we had an opportunity to talk with him before he passed, and we shared a lot of great stories, and we had a lot of mutual respect for each other. We really did.
Let's get into the special teams when we come back. They had a day last week.
Had a big day.
Another day this week, too. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, head coach Doug Marone joined us in the first half hour on the Doug Marone Show. Special teams had, I guess, their most consistent day of the season this past week in the win over Cincinnati. Long field goal from Lambeau, a couple others. Punt return for a touchdown in the game, and Jadon Mickens in his second game where the organization takes one to the house. And by the way, he called his shot earlier in the game. I don't know if you saw the replay on the TV. There was a first quarter punt, a fair catch, right?
Right.
They're barking at him after the play. You know, of course, Cincinnati, that's what they do. That was what was happening all game long. Well, he points at him and says, "Hey, you, I'm going to take it to the house," and does the touchdown sign. And ran off the field. And he called it. He did it later in the game. So yeah, he told us that in an interview this week.
You know, he was impressive just because, you know, the one thing that used to drive me crazy, and I'm going back a few years ago, he was a draft pick from South Carolina.
Ace Sanders.
And he would go east and west on these punt returns. And I would be going, what are you doing? I mean, to be an effective returner, you have to be courageous first off because, I mean, guys are running full speed downhill at you. But you have to have the courage to go north and south. And that was what impressed me the most on both of the returns that Jadon had, is that he got north and south immediately and makes the gunners miss. And then once he's hitting that north and south with speed, then he starts to adjust as he's going. And that was a big-time play. And they've been – and we've talked about it here that, look, if you're going to play the kind of football that the Jaguars play, which is, you know, run the football, play good defense, special teams at some point, if you're going to be a good team – has to be a positive. Well, it finally became a positive. You know, I don't want to say finally, because, you know, the week before against Indianapolis, with Josh Lambeau being perfect on his field goals and on his extra points, it felt good, right?
It was solid. Yeah.
But it wasn't a positive, you know. And then there were other opportunities to be a positive. You know, Blair Brown had a penalty on one return on a kickoff coverage. Aurelius Ben kind of got out of his lane and allowed the containment to break that could have been better. But, you know, I don't think they're – and a lot of people may
laugh. There's always going to be little things like that, though.
Yeah, right? It will be. But, you know, if you're going to be good, I mean, really good, those are the things that you can have happen. Okay. You know, because it happened twice. You know, there was two penalties in that game, and then you got the one return that they let out a little bit. What a big return. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people probably call me crazy for saying this, but I think the bigger play on special teams than the punt return was the field goal at the end of the half.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at that point, you know, you've got a 10-7 lead, okay? And if I remember correctly, there was about, 20
something seconds left, or maybe under just under a minute left when they kicked that field goal. If you miss that field goal, you give the ball to the Bengals on the minus 46, so just short of midfield. You give them an opportunity to tie the game up or for them to take the lead going in at the half, and all of a sudden you would feel like, wait a minute, we dominated the first half, but you look up on the scoreboard and you're not. You know, so first of all, a gutsy move by Doug Marrone to call for the field goal kick in that situation with that much time left. Because you'd like to have that situation where the kick ends the half. But what a kick.
Drilled it.
I mean, 56 yards, Josh Lambeau, I mean, smooth as silk. I mean, drilled it. And if I remember correctly, the wind was, you know, out of the northeast, in that, you know, so it was in his face. So, I mean, that was a big kick. And Josh Lambeau has been perfect so far as a Jaguar. And he's facing his former team and his former teammate at Texas A&M, because if you remember a couple years ago, we were there in San Diego when Josh Lambeau was the kicker for the San Diego Chargers with his college teammate, Drew Kayser, who is their punter. Very good punter, by the way, for the San Diego Chargers. But, you know, that was, in my mind, I was going, man, he's got to make this. And he did, and that was a big-time play.
Doug Marrone kind of deadpan this week, deadpan Doug during the press conference.
He's good at that, Wednesday.
He was asked, why the decision on the field goal? I think it was Monday, maybe, on the conference call. One of the two. And he said, well, I asked Josh, can you make it from 56? He's like, yeah. If he'd have said no, we would have punted.
Well, so, and here's the other thing, I think, that as a coach, and Doug had mentioned this to me, that if you got a yes, but there was any hesitation in the answer whatsoever, then that really is a no. You know, but Josh Mila said yes.
Absolutely.
So, you
know. Make kicks. Let's go. Make some kicks.
If he goes to, let's say he goes to Josh Lambeau, and it's a 68-yarder, okay, he's not going up to Josh Lambeau and say, hey, can you make this 68-yarder, and looking into his eyes and seeing if he can make it.
Yes, coach, I can do
that. He's got a range that they have felt out, I'm sure, over the last couple weeks since Josh Lambeau has been here, that Joe DeCamillis and special teams assistant special teams coordinator, that Doug Mallory they've worked through, and that they have a comfort range for Josh Lambeau. And obviously that was in the comfort range, but Doug wanted to get affirmation from Josh that, hey, he's ready.
Let's come back and get to the schedule this week. The end of the week. I say that every week. The week's over. It's Thursday.
Right? No, the hay is not in the barn yet, JP. The week is not over.
Well, we'll break down what's coming up the rest of this week for these Jacksonville Jaguars. This is the Doug Marrone Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marrone Show continues right now.
Final moments of the Doug Marrone Show. JP Shadrick, Jeff Logman, and for those on our flagship station, 1010XL in Jacksonville, Jaguars Thursday is next. It's us two. And Tony Buscelli is on the road tonight in Arizona.
What is it, Seattle, Arizona tonight,
good game.
Right? Yeah, it's a good game.
Good matchup good out game. West. So we'll hear from Big Bo coming up shortly in the next hour. A few final thoughts here. This defense, let's start with them. They haven't had a takeaway the last couple of weeks.
No, they've been without, you know, in the last two games. But, I mean, if you look at what this defense has been able to accomplish, I mean, this year, I mean, the highlights are amazing. You know, people just excited about this defense, as they should be, because, you know, they're just to summarize, I mean, they've scored four touchdowns as defense. You know,
it's tied for the league lead, yeah.
You know, first of all, number one in points a game, okay, number one against the pass, number three in total defense. But just some highlights. I mean, five interceptions against Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger's career high. 10 sacks against the Texans. 10 sacks against the Colts.
You rarely see 10 sacks one time in the season. Rarely.
The Ravens game at Wembley, they allowed 15 yards of offense, net yards of offense in the first half. Hmm. Against the Bengals, they only allowed 12 yards of offense.
37 plays.
In the second half. They got a shutout against the Colts. I mean, these are incredible, incredible numbers by the defense as a whole. And so they're fun to watch. They can actually bring in waves of guys up front. You know, the one thing you always hope for is for everybody to stay healthy. You know, knock on wood, you always say that, especially in the back end, because I don't think they have a whole lot of depth there. But an impressive performance, and Blake Bortles seems to be hitting his stride, and that's really positive news. They can keep it going on defense, and Blake continues to play well, and this team's got an opportunity.
Just keep playing, week to week, keep playing. And the next one up, the Los Angeles Chargers. Hey, we'll talk to you in just a few minutes on Jaguars Thursday.
You got it.
When we return, Jaguars Thursday on our flagship station, Tony Boselli will join us. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.